Welcome to this Kreatoras interview. Today we have a special guest, NGO Latin American Foundation for Futures specialist Marcela Munoz. Great to have you.
Hi, thank you for having me here.
Okay, so let's start. And could you introduce yourself and your organization and a bit of a history of your organization?
So I'm the program manager at LAF, Latin American Foundation for the Future. I come from Colombia, from Bogota, but I've been living here in Cusco for over a year and a half now working for LAF. What LAF does, it's a UK registered charity, so it all began in the UK, but this was because back in 2007, so almost 11 years, 12 years now. Our founder, Sarah Oakes, she was volunteering here in Cusco for 3 years, seeing the situation of street children in Cusco and seeing the harsh reality of what many children have to go through here, decided to found LAF to be able to provide support from the UK to Peru, specifically to Cusco, and specifically to partner organizations, such as a home, back then, a home called Dasulwasi. And that's how it all started.
Oh, really interesting. And is there many social development NGOs in Peru?
Yes. In Peru in general, as a country, it's a very big country. It's one of the biggest countries in Latin America. And just like all the region, there are many issues regarding social inequality, regarding extreme poverty and environmental issues. That's something that we unfortunately share as a region. But something that is fortunate is the solidarity amongst us. And in that way, there are many NGOs that work to improve these situations. Yes.
Okay. And how about the like the NGO's operational environment, what kind of relationship you have to policymakers? Like, are your voice heard in policymaking?
Right. That depends on the country. So in this case, in Peru, Peru, just like a little summary on how it's politically arranged. There are regions here, each region has its governmental entity, and inside each region there's provinces, and then there's cities that might also have districts. This is the case of Cusco. We right now are talking in Cusco City, which is part of the Cusco district, which in turn is part of the Cusco province and Cusco region. All of this just to say that there's different levels of government, and in all of those, there's influence in the policy making of each level. Peru, however, is highly centralized, which means that most of the policies come from the national level, mainly from Lima, the coast, and then governments, such as the regional or provincial governments, don't have a lot to say in where the money goes or how the money comes in. In that sense, the level of autonomy of the regions isn't too high. So many of the things in policy at the policy level depend on the nationwide scale. Why do I say this? Because LAF in particular works in education, and we know that it's the Ministry of Education that dictates a lot of what schools are supposed to do and what municipalities and provinces are supposed to offer. And in that sense, it's hard to influence at that level. Nonetheless, we do work on that. Like, LAF is part of a network here in Cusco. It's called the Red Semilla Network, or like the network, the seed network, Red Semilla Nueva, actually. So new seed network in English. And it's compiled of many NGOs that work around education and children and young people here in Cusco. Many of these are homes. So like homes for children that have been abandoned or neglected and have no family. And there are many of these in Cusco. And we get together once a month and we talk about ways how we can support or like kind of influence politics and policies in a way that can favor our interests, that are the interests of the children. So there's different committees of different departments here in Cusco, and we try to participate in that. Whatever NGO that can be part of these tables represent the network at once, and that's how we sort of try to influence policy. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's really nice to hear that you have some ways to influence. But I know that I've been talking to different NGOs in Bolivia and Paraguay. So they're quite. Bolivia has been a bit more open, but now it's getting
harder. Yes, that's something in common with all. I guess it's a regional thing, like a Latin American thing. To struggle, there's a lot of corruption, and in that sense, corruption goes even to a it's a cultural thing, I would say. Me being Colombian, I can say that it's not the best news or anything, but we fight corruption every day with every action that we take as citizens as well. And to be able to influence in politics is also to every day say no to ways of being corrupt. And that can be, I don't know, sometimes not to bribe the policeman or not to run by a red light or not to get ahead of the queue, you know, things like that. And it's a slow process that we have as a region to understand why it's important to say no to corruption and to not vote for corrupt politicians. It's a whole cultural change that we need to make.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's a thing. It's going to
yes, and
it's
yeah.
really hard and going to take a while.
But we're there. We're processing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you said about you have some those kind of links to the other organizations. You have committees, and so you can influence. And that's really so. It's really important to have networks.
Yes.
Networks in this area.
Yes.
So do you have networks only in Peru or also in other countries?
As LAF, we currently only work in Peru. So we're working with this network that's on a Cusco level. Of course, we are interested in trying to expand these type of networks in a way where we're aware of what other people are doing in other parts of the world. Obviously, this is also applied to Latin America, just because we see that there's commonalities in the fights that we're having, you know, and in the type of support that we try to provide for the children. It happens everywhere. Like, you see these situations all over the region, and you also find very interesting organizations that are tackling the problem in different ways. So our point of view is looking at who we can partner up with or collaborate that can bring to the table something that might be good for us here in our context, but also our knowledge and what we've learned here, how can that be useful for others. So just as an example, there's this NGO called Sole. Sole, it's an idea that comes from India. It's an NGO from India, but it's working in Latin America. And they try to promote alternative ways of learning for children that it's not necessarily in a school, like a formal education environment, but how they can learn via the internet and how they can learn independently without having a teacher. And for us, that's super interesting what they're doing, because maybe we can apply that with the partners that we work with children that are really into computers and internet, and how can you use technology to also provide alternative ways of learning. So that's just one example of how we are looking into what other people do and how we create connections that way. I think it's very important for us to keep doing that, and I think that we should all be doing that a little bit, right? Just try to be more connected in that way.
Yeah, that's really important.
Mm-hmm.
In our field, it's really for networks, because most of the non-government organizations are quite small, so our organization is really small, so if you want to influence, you have to be really good networks.
Exactly.
Thing about how about the funding? Is it difficult to find funding for projects?
Well, the NGO world, yes, it is like the general answer would be yes, just because we're so many, right? It's such a saturated market in that sense that to look for funds, it's to compete against many others who need the funds just as much as you do. So you need to find ways on how to make yourself attractive enough. It's a very businessy type of way of seeing things, but yeah, that's how it works. And at least in the NGO world, you try to look for funds from funders that are scarce compared to the whole demand of people that need these funds. So yes, it is hard. In our case, we specialize in fundraising from the UK because that's where we're registered. That's our majority of audience. So that's where they come from. So it makes us quite a bit special here in Cusco because there aren't that many UK charities. So what we try to do is take that as an advantage. That's why we were born as well, to be able to provide those funds from the UK and channel them to the needs that are here in Cusco, and like the local communities and the partners that we work with at this level, because you've got partners, our partners, we've got four, they're local NGOs that don't have these contacts in the UK. So what we do is serve like as an umbrella and as a channel on how we can provide those funds through us, and how we can obviously improve the education, like provide education opportunities to children that way. Yeah, but it is hard. Yes.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah,
Yes.
but it's really like it's really interesting to hear about how you provide those funds from UK to here and.
Yes, it's not easy, but it's part of the job, you know? Fundraising, it's just like the big chunk that you just need to go through and do, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Now we could move along for could you describe the poverty and inequality situation in Peru?
Yes. So Peru, just as a context, this is important, I think. Peru is geographically divided into three main areas: the coast, the Sierra, so the mountain area, the Andes, where we're at right now, and the jungle. So you have highly contrasted areas, where historically one area has been more developed than the other. So you have the coast, you have Lima, it's the capital city, it's where you have metropolitan areas, it's the hotspot of Peru, right? Then you have the Sierra that is highly indigenous. So indigenous culture is the percentage here, it's more than half of the people recognize themselves as indigenous. At this is different than in the coast where they do not. And you have another situation. You have more isolation, the mountains. You have communities in the Andes that are 4,000 meters or higher in altitude that are not connected to city life, and that are very much isolated, have their own language, and have their own characteristics of poverty, right? And then you have the jungle, which is even highlighting that even more, like remoteness, isolation, and difficulties in terms of access to services, in terms of access to education, health, all of this. So when we're talking about poverty, I would say in the concept of what poverty means to me, that's not only income-wise, but it's also about lack of access to these services. Yes, there is a huge problem about poverty and inequality, and you can see it in these three regions very clearly, how one region, the coast, is better off than the middle, that's the Sierra, and the Sierra is better off than the jungle area. And you see these inequalities colliding in the culture of Peru. So you see this cultural struggle of identity between colonization, sorry, and indigenous culture, and how these two can merge, and how discrimination appears out of that, to how you are discriminated from coming from the mountain if you are in the coast and you are someone from the mountain, or if you're someone from the jungle and you're here in the mountain or in the coast, you will face many disadvantages, just because you're from a specific place. And poverty, in Peru, I would think in Latin America in general, but poverty is so linked to inequality. You see extreme cases of poverty around city lines like Lima, around the slums, for instance. You have informal growth of cities where people just arrive there to look for new opportunities that are not in their own region, be that the mountain or the jungle or whatever, and they don't have access to basic rights and to health and to education, but water even, or shelter in some cases. But poverty is very complex, and you can see that complexity here in Peru because rural poverty is very different than urban poverty, and you have both in Peru. But it's just trying to tackle this thing of lack of access to basic services such as education and health. This is a big problem in rural Peru because of the isolation that I just told you about. It's so hard to get to some communities where there's no light, there's no electricity, and none of that. And if someone is sick, they would have to travel hours or days to get to the nearest hospital. And I would see that as an issue around poverty. But then again, it's to understand these contrasts of geography and the way that Peru is politically divided makes it even harder because everything is so centralized that to get these services to the regions and to these communities, it's very, very hard because it's all located in the center, right? So that's the challenge. Yeah, not really that easy. Yeah.
Yeah, sounds really, really challenging. And I like there is in many Latin American countries, there is so totally different areas and totally different cultures also. Like in Bolivia, I think there was
Yeah.
34
How
cultures.
many indigenous groups are there in Bolivia? So many.
Yeah, 34 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really so you can imagine how just how difficult it is because there are more interest groups. Like when you have more cultural groups, there are always also different kind of interests they have, and so it's really so the inequality situation in these countries is really difficult, and to add that to the democracy of
Yeah.
the
So, yeah, all of this to say that these are complex issues. One would wish that they were easier to solve and just say, give money to the poor and that's it and you solve the
yeah.
problem. No. Each of those little words can carry a lot of history, a lot of like sensitive culture factors that need to be taken into account. And yes, we live in these days where we're accelerating all of that with globalization, with what we call democracy in a way. How can you deal with catching up with these issues and at the same time keep up the pace of what the world is requiring you as a state, right? Like as a country where you need to be like always looking towards improving your economy, right? And then when you on one side are a country in development such as Peru or any other Latin American country, I'm speaking for my own country, Colombia, on one side you need to rush towards this economic development to industrialize, to keep up, right? To sign trade agreements, free trade agreements, and to do all of this on one side and keep the bubble and the investment coming in. And at the same time, how are you supposed to keep the equality? How can you reduce these inequality lines? How can you reduce discrimination? How can you keep your own culture? How can you preserve what is culturally yours and unique at the same time? It's like living two lives. It's like, trying to do two things that are completely opposite at once. And that's why it doesn't work. Yeah, so that's kind of like the dilemma that we're at.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's really difficult situation, and I think that is why, like we have in Finland, we have always fights for the development aid, that the development aid, like the government would like to give the our own firms like to the, so they can have a, so that they are linked to our economy,
Mm.
our different kind of firms that will try to conquer the markets.
Yeah.
And the another thing is the helicopter money is also. It's good that now we don't have any more that kind of it has been proven to be really
Yeah.
insufficient to just to put money to the some countries, and that doesn't look where the money goes.
Yeah, that's a bit about the transparency factor, and having this has to do a lot with NGOs actually, in the world, but I would say in Latin America as well. There's a big responsibility for NGOs to be transparent about how money is being used. Just as a government should, we should as well. We have a big responsibility in showing that every cent is actually going where it's supposed to go, and to make that clear for everybody, right? And we have had cases in the past of development aid, where governments invest so much money in crisis, that humanitarian crisis, and then you go, well, is this really being used in the correct way? Is this causing more harm than good, etc.? And I think that we have a responsibility as the NGO sector to be transparent about our work, about what's good about what we do, but also what goes wrong. And like, it's okay to be wrong sometimes. It's okay to go, you know what, we tried out this project and it did not work out because this XYZ reasons, right? But to be open about these things is part of being responsible, and people can account you for what you're doing. I guess that's something that we can still work on as a sector.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And then now I would like to hear about the social security system in Peru, because I have been noticing that in most of the Latin American countries there is the same thing, that everybody is like, there's the unemployment is really low. It's like lower than 5% or something. But I think, but you can see in here, everyone is like selling something. They have a little shop or some in the street corner or something.
Yeah. Social security. So, just to add on that employment thing, that's something that's very characteristic of our region, and is that you may not have a formal job, but you will get around. Like, you will find ways to sustain your family, whether that is selling arepas, or in Colombia, or in Cusco, it might be tamales or whatever. You will find a way to make ends meet. And that's sort of the resilience of our people, I think. And I think that's great. But unfortunately, that also, this informality of employment comes because, yeah, it's not like in Europe, this thing about social security, about having some type of tax, so that if you're unemployed, you can get some sort of amount of money while you're unemployed, things like that. Those don't exist here. So the way that social security works, I wouldn't be able to be like super detailed on the system in Peru, because I'm new at this as well, like knowing how the system works here in Peru. What I do know is that you have basic health benefits, as part of, you being Peruvian, for instance, and pension schemes. But welfare in that sense does not include protecting you when you're unemployed, or it does not include protecting you with services, because of your economic situation. No, unfortunately, you do have subvenciones, we call in Spanish subventions, where maybe you get access to literally a basket of food or things like that according to your situation. And you have like direct aid in that sense. There's also community comedores comunitarios in Spanish, would be like community dining rooms where you can go to a place and have dinner for free, because that's the service that is offered by the state, by the government. Unfortunately, you do not have a complete program. There is no money for this. Like, this is something, a topic. and that in the mentality of many looks very socialist. I'm air quoting here, just because it sounds like the state gives you things. And many people are of the idea that the state should not meddle and should just, like, free market and that's it. So those are like political views. And right now we're in a government that is not of that stance at all. And I think Latin America as a region is shifting towards a right-wing political era where these type of support from government institutions are not favored in these governments. Yeah, it sucks. It's bad.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's really
Yeah, that's
sad
the
to hear.
political picture of nowadays, yeah.
There's, but I think it's more like in Bolivia, it's also the left government. It's like the, it doesn't, sometimes the left also can be.
Yeah, well, we're talking here about what democracy and authoritarianism blend into one. Like what's happening in Bolivia. I don't know how many years has Evo Morales already been in the government, but it slowly stops being a democracy when you have a person for those many years, right? I'm not sure about his politics specifically, but what I do know is that unfortunately, Brazil, Argentina, Colombia, Peru, Chile, they're all going towards the right-wing political movements, being more conservative, being more free market, lowering government expenditure. And when you lower government expenditure, that means that there's less money for things like that, like subventions or aid to those who don't have a job or who possibly are living under what they officially call extreme poverty and what else. So it's very hard because it's every man left for his own. And but that unfortunately is what the political framework is of the region right now. Yeah.
It's really sad, and but what would be the best ways to end poverty and reduce inequality in Peru?
Yes, well, that's
Where to
is
start?
that the question, isn't it? I think that for us in LAF, education is key. And we've seen it how education, if you have access to opportunities related to education, if you can graduate from high school, if you can then graduate from university or from a technical institution, you have more chances of overcoming these advantages that you were born to, just because you were born in a specific place, and it's not your fault. It's totally unjust, right? It's not your fault that you were born in an isolated community, in a place where there's no secondary school, right? But then you have to overcome all of these disadvantages to finally be able to, to overcome this and have a better life, right? So I would say education is key, access to education. I would also, like from a personal point of view, I would say that these problems can't be solved if we're all trying to find solutions independently. I would say that we need to get together to be able to bring about innovative ideas, and that the only way to do that is by collaborating and by mixing different disciplines and by mixing different sectors. It's not that the NGO sector is on one side of the story, the government in the other, and the private sector in the other. If we keep seeing things so separate, we're not going to get anywhere because these complex problems require complex solutions. And for you to be able to do that, you need to understand the whole picture. Unfortunately, we are brought up in the formal education system in a way that you need to specialize in one thing and be that one thing and just do that one thing. And you're like closed-minded already, like in your career, whatever. If you're a scientist or engineer, you're just like focused on that, right? How come in social sciences, we're also taught that if you want to specialize in something, you just really need to focus down, right? The point of view that we need a systemic way of thinking, and that will bring solutions for these complex things. I also really believe in the power of the local, and the local means to provide local solutions to local issues. We don't want to solve global warming by striking and that's it, right? Or we don't want to solve like huge issues by just like knocking on politicians' doors. No, we need to do the stuff ourselves in the local level. And to do that is to think creatively and go like, all right, what are renewable energy ideas that we can apply that are cheap and that make sense to the community and the context that we're working with? And I think that's very important to always have in mind what is A, local, what is B, sustainable, and C, what can be scalable in this complex world that we live in, right? So I think that's what we have to have in mind.
That's really, that's good points that you brought, and really.
Thank you.
You have really thought about it a lot.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think about this a lot.
Yeah. All right, and now we could, like, what could EU and the Western countries like Finland to do to help the Peru social and environmental development?
Okay, so I think it's important for countries of the Northern Hemisphere of Europe and of Finland to be aware that it's not like countries in South America or in the global south are so different from you, actually. No, we're all talking about the same thing. We're all humans here going through globalization in a way where it's very easy to adapt and to understand what people in Finland live in as it is in Peru, right? So we have this technological tools nowadays that allow us to close down those barriers that before really it was impossible to even think about, right? But now we've got the internet, we've got so many media tools, and we've got so many opportunities to work together that I think that's the way that we should be thinking about. It's not about you and us, us and them. No, it's about all of us, and how can we create things together, regardless of the country that you come from, regardless of the specific geographies that we're all at, right? And I think in that sense, European countries and should just take advantage of the benefits and like the opportunities that are there that can possibly help out countries in South America. For instance, the opportunity that you have to keep collaborating as a continent, the European Union, for instance, for me personally, I think that is a great thing because it can move countries in a way that could possibly allow for more development aid to come to these countries in a sustainable way. So just like bringing ideas together, it's also about keep doing what you're doing right because it sets an example to other countries as well. I'm just talking about Finland and their education system, for instance, and how alternative ways of learning and leaving this traditional idea of formal education, how can that be beneficial, for instance, for a kid who grew up in another language and now has to go to school and sit down and look at the whiteboard and learn math in such a traditional way that it's not really useful, right? So how can we learn from these different experiences to build something new together? I think that that's what we should be doing, and European countries should take advantage of those opportunities of being so close together and creating these niches of collaboration and sort of just producing these ideas with the help of all of us. I think that that's something that can be done. Yeah. Okay.
Good, really good points.
Glad.
Yeah. I think there was all of my questions. I have learned a lot of.
Yeah, I'm glad.
Yeah. Thank you for the interview.
You're welcome. Okay.